Yes, I am, I answered timidly. Genesius was silent for some time before speaking, as if adjusting himself to my unexpected attitude. Your resolutions are most praiseworthy, he said at last. May the Lord help you to adhere to them. And, as if anxious to raise my spirit with new hope, he continued, when the disciple is ready, the Father sends the Master. The same occurs with work. When one is willing to serve, he never lacks opportunities. In your case, my friend, divine providence had been extremely generous. You are eager to serve, you understand your responsibility and accept your duty. Such attitude is undoubtedly leading you to the accomplishment of your wishes. On the physical plane, many applaud a person who attains financial prosperity or an outstanding position. Here, however, the case is different. To us, comprehension, effort and sincere humility are the things that really matter. Sensing my anxious expectation, he added, it's quite possible for you to obtain work. However, for the time being, it would be wiser for you to frequent our numerous departments, and to observe and study their different activities. Then he contacted the next office, saying aloud, I should like to see Rabias before he goes down to the chambers of rectification. In a few minutes, a gentleman with pleasant manners came into the room. Tobias, exclaimed Genesius courteously. Here is a friend who came from the Ministry of Assistance for a period of observation. I believe a visit to the chambers of rectification would be greatly beneficial to him. I offered the newcomer my hand, which he grasped firmly, saying affably, at your service. Take him with you, continued the minister kindly. Andre must become thoroughly acquainted with our different activities. Please see that he is granted every available opportunity. I am on my way there now, Tobias added obligingly, if you wish to accompany me. Certainly, I answered eagerly. I took my leave of the minister, who addressed me with further inspiring words of encouragement. Then I resolutely followed Tobias, and together we walked along great city blocks, whose numerous building gave me the impression of busy centers of work. Perceiving my silent questions, my new friend informed, these are the great plants of the astral city. Here, over 100,000 spirits are employed in the preparation of juices and in the manufacture of woven goods and all kinds of commodities, while working at the same time at their own rehabilitation and enlightenment. By a few minutes we entered an imposing building. After crossing long galleries where numerous workers hurried to and from, we came to a monumental stairway leading to the lower floors. Let's descend, said Tobias gravely. Noting my surprise, he added solicitously, the chambers of rectification are located closer to the lower zone. On first arriving in the astral city, the unfortunate entities who are lodged here cannot bury the light or open air. Chapter 27, Work at Last. Never could I have pictured the scene now before my eyes. It was neither hospital nor a conventional nursing home, but a series of vast intercommunicating wards crowded with carcass-like human forms. A strange clamoring filled the air, groans, sobs and plaintive phrases uttered at random. Ghastly faces, bony hands and monstrous bore witness to their terrible spiritual misery. So upsetting were my first impressions that I had to resort to prayer to keep my strength. Tobias called an old nurse. There are so few assistants today, he asked, surprised. What has happened? Minister Flickus sent word that most of them were to accompany the Samaritans on their rounds in the regions of the lower zone, which is an organization of spirit benefactors in the astral city, a note by the spirit author. Well, Tobias decided calmly. We must fill the gaps. There is no time to waste. Brother Tobias, have mercy, cried out an old man, clutching the bed and gesticulating like a madman. I am suffocating. This is 1,000 times worse than death on earth. Help. I want to leave this place, to get out. I must have air, more air. Tobias approached and examined him carefully, and inquired, why is rebarrel so much worse? He was had one of his worst crises, informed the nurse. Assistant Gonsalves attributes it chiefly to the heavy charge of dense thoughts emitted by his incarnate relations. As he is still very weak and lacks the mental strength to break away from his earthly ties, The poor creature has not been able to resist their influence. While Tobias gently stroked the patient's forehead, the nurse continued, "Early this morning, he rushed out of the ward, crying loudly that he was needed at home, that he couldn't forget his wife and children, that it was cruel to keep him here away from them. Lawrence and Hermes tried in vain to bring him back to bed. Therefore, I thought that it would be in his best interests to take away his energy and mobility, which I did by applying some prostrating magnetic passes to him." "You did well," agreed Tobias thoughtfully. "I will see that measures are taken against the influence of his family's attitude. They must be given a greater share of worries so that they may leave Ribeiro in peace." I looked intensely at the patient, trying to determine his emotional state. He wore the typical expression of the mentally deranged and seemed utterly unconscious of what was being said about him. He called Tobias automatically, as do children who know their benefactor. My new instructor, noting my amazement, explained, "The poor thing is still in a nightmarish phase, during which the soul is wrapped up in its own afflictions, with little perception of anything else. Man, my friend, reaps exactly what he has sown. Our poor Ribeiro has been a prey to numerous illusions. I wanted to ask about his history and the source of his sufferings, but remembering Laura's advice on curiosity, I kept my peace." Tobias addressed the patient with kind words of encouragement and hope, and promised he would see to the means of improving his condition, that for his own good he should calm down and take his confinement in bed patiently. Ribeiro, trembling pitiably and ghastly pale, smiled sadly and thanked him with tears in his eyes. We walked slowly along, between numerous rows of well-kept beds. Unwholesome exhalations filled the place, caused, I later learned, by the mental emanations of those who were still under the painful impression of physical death, or dominated by the low vibrations of inferior thoughts. These words are used exclusively for male entities. "Tobias, Tobias, I am parched and starving," shouted the patient. "Help me, brother," yelled another. "For the love of God, I can't stand this any longer," cried out a third. My heart was heavy before so much suffering, and I could not help asking, "My friend, how sad it is to see all these sufferings and tormented spirits. Why must there exist such a dismal place?" Tobias replied with perfect composure, "In observing the scene, you must try to see beyond the pain and isolation. Remember, brother, that these patients have already left the lower zones, where so many pitfalls lie in wait for those who have heedlessly neglected their spirit selves. In these chambers, patients are not only cared for, they are also prepared for their future redemption. We must bear in mind that their suffering is of their own doing. Man's life is always centered wherever his heart is." And, after a pause during which he seemed deaf to the clamoring around us, he added, "They are smugglers of eternal life." "What do you mean?" I asked. "They expected mere earthly acquisitions to have the same value in the spirit spheres. They believed that criminal pleasures, the power of money, infringement of the law and the imposition of self would cross the frontiers of the sepulcher and still be in force here, offering them new opportunities for further follies. They were thoughtless businessmen who forgot to exchange their material acquisitions for spiritual currency. When in the flesh, they traveled to a foreign city, they always took care to provide themselves with the currency of the country which they visit. Yet, while certain of the inevitability of the final trip to the spiritual regions, they neglected to acquire spiritual values. Thus the millionaire of the physical sphere becomes the spiritual pauper." How true! Tobias' words could not have been more logical. After distributing comfort and hope, he led me to the next ward. Narcisa, the nurse, followed us and deferentially opened the door. As I entered, I nearly staggered with heart-sickening surprise. It was a chamber of vast proportions where 32 men, with sinister countenances, lay quite still on very low beds. Their almost unnoticeable breath was the only sign of life they presented. These unhappy entities are in a sleep much heavier than that of most of our ignorant brothers. We call them the negative believers, for instead of accepting the Lord, they were unconditional slaves of self. Instead of believing in life, action and work, they admitted only the victory of crime, immobility and eternal nothing. they transform their earthly experience into the constant preparation for a long slumber, and as they had no notion of good, of brotherly cooperation, there is nothing left for them now but to sleep on for years and years as helpless victims of ghastly nightmares. I was horrified at these explanations and stared at Tobias, who began to carefully apply strengthening passes on the patients. When the treatment on the first two was over, they both began vomiting a black substance, a dark and viscous matter with cadaverous emanations. They are expelling poisonous fluids, explained Tobias calmly. Narcisa was doing her best to keep up with the cleaning, but in vain, for by this time a great number of them had begun expelling the same dark and fetid matter. It was then that I instinctively got hold of the cleaning implements and set myself to work. The nurse seemed thankful for my help, and Tobias threw me a glance that well expressed his satisfaction and gratitude. The work continued throughout the day, bringing with it a blessed fatigue. No friend in the physical world could possibly appreciate the sublime joy of the physician recommencing his self-education from the humblest of nursing tasks. Chapter 28, On Duty. After the collective prayer in the evening, Tobias turned on the receiver to listen to the Samaritans at work in the lower zones. I learned that the patrols of workers on such missions communicated with their headquarters at set hours. I felt somewhat tired from my strenuous efforts, but my heart was singing with joy. At last I had work to do and was experiencing a mysteriously invigorating tonic of service. A few minutes after the set had been tuned in, I heard a strange voice, "Samaritans to the Ministry of Regenerations. Samaritans to the Ministry of Regeneration. Heavy labor in the abysses of darkness. We have succeeded in dislodging a great number of unfortunate entities and have rescued 29 brothers from spirit shadows. 22 are mentally deranged and 7 in utter psychic exhaustion. Our patrols are preparing transportation. We'll arrive soon after midnight. Please see to the necessary arrangements." I noticed that Narcisa and Tobias exchanged significant glances, and when the broadcast ended I asked, "What do they mean? Why this collective transportation? Aren't they all spirits?" Tobias smiled and replied, "You forget, brother, that you yourself arrived at the Ministry of Assistance in such a manner. I know all about your coming. We must bear in mind that in the lower zone, just as on earth, we are clothed in heavy fluids. The ostrich and the swallow are both birds and have wings, yet the former can rise into the air unless transported, whereas the latter will rise to the sky in swift flight." As if to make it known that there was no time for digressions, he turned to Narcisa and said, "Tonight's group is a large one. We must take immediate measures. We will need more beds," she exclaimed somewhat anxiously. "Don't worry," answered Tobias resolutely. "The mentally deranged patients will be lodged in Pavilion 7 and the weak ones in Ward 33. Raising his right hand to his forehead as if trying to make an important decision, he remarked, "The problem of lodging will be easily settled, but the ones concerning assistance won't be so quickly solved. Because of the dark clouds obscuring the world of the incarnate, our strongest workers have been detailed to reinforce the services of the Ministry of Communication. We need helpers for night duty, because those working with the Samaritans will return extremely tired. I would be happy to lend a hand to the best of my ability," I exclaimed spontaneously. Tobias gave me a look of appreciative gratitude which filled my heart with gladness. "But have you really made up your mind to stay in the chambers during the night?" he asked, surprised. "Aren't others doing the same?" I inquired in turn. "I am feeling strong and fit, and must make up for lost time." My new friend patted me on the back, saying, "Well then, I accept your cooperation. Narcisa and the others will also stay on duty. Moreover, I'll send you Venantius and Celestius, two of our most dependable brothers. I myself can't remain here tonight, because of a previous engagement, but I will leave a careful plan of the work to be done. If anything unexpected should turn up, you or any of the assistants can get in touch with me." We all set about making the most urgent arrangements. While Narcisa, aided by 5 attendants, prepared the linen and nursing equipment, Tobias and I moved heavy pieces of furniture into Pavilion 7 and Ward 33. I would be at loss to explain what was happening to me. Although physically tired, I felt exultantly happy. In the office or workshop, where most are anxious to undertake their tasks to the best of their ability, to serve is the highest privilege. In truth, the hour bonus and any other immediate reward I might gain for my efforts was far from my mind. Yet I was deeply satisfied at the thought that in my new position as a humble but worthy worker, I would no longer be ashamed to face my mother or my benefactors in the Ministry of Assistance. On leaving, Tobias again embraced me, saying, "May the peace of Jesus abide with you all. I wish you a good night of profitable work. Tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. you may rest. In the ordinary times, 12 hours of work is the most we may put in, but these are unusual circumstances." I replied that I was extremely content with his decision. Later, along with a great number of nurses in attendance, I began to take a more kindly interest in the patients. Among my co-workers, Narcisa, with her spontaneous kindness and maternal solicitude, greatly impressed me. I was attracted by her generosity and tried to come into closer contact with her. It was easy, and I soon found myself enjoying the pleasure of her simple but edifying conversation. The dear old woman was like a living book whose every page breathed devotion and wisdom. "But sister, have you been working here for long?" I inquired after a few minutes of friendly conversation. "Yes, I have been in active service in the Chambers of Rectification for 6 years and a few months. I must continue here for over 3 more years being able to fulfill my purpose." At my questioning look, she continued, "I need a serious endorsement." "Endorsement? What do you mean, interested?" "You see, I must meet some beloved spirits who are reincarnated on the earth, so that together we may work out our advancement. Because of my past errors, I begged for a long time in vain for the opportunity to carry out my plans. I was living in an anxious and perturbed condition. One day I was advised to speak with Minister Veneranda. She agreed to endorse my plans, on the condition that I work here for 10 years to correct certain unbalanced emotional attitudes. I considered the imposition too hard at first, and felt like refusing, but I gradually realized that she was right. After all, that corrective measure was meant to benefit me, not her. I can't tell you how much I have profited by having accepted Veneranda's advice. I feel more balanced and understanding now, and I believe I shall live my next experience on the physical sphere with spiritual dignity." I was about to express my astonishment, when a patient near us called out, "Narcisa, Narcisa." I had no right to keep the devoted sister from her duties just to satisfy my curiosity. Chapter 29, Francis' Vision. While Narcisa was busy comforting the afflicted patient, I was called to a city communications device, similar to a telephone. It was Laura, asking for news. I realized that I had forgotten to tell her about my decision to remain in the chambers for night duty. I apologized and informed her of the situation. Even over the wire I could sense her joy at the news. At the end of our short conversation she said, "That's wonderful, my child. Love your work and fill your heart with the joy of useful. Only in this way can we bring about our everlasting edification. Now, just one more word. Remember, too, that this house is also yours." These words encouraged me and brought me joy. Returning to the chambers, I found Narcisa struggling heroically to calm a young man who seemed to be suffering from a serious mental disorder. I tried to help her. The poor boy, staring out into space, cried out in agony, "Help me, for God's sake. I'm frightened, frightened." With a panic-stricken look on his face, he went on, "Sister Narcisa, he is coming. The monster. I can feel the worms again. Here he is, right there. Save me from him. Send him away." "Calm down, Frances," answered the devoted nurse, "you will be free of him and will be left in peace, but it depends on your own efforts. Just pretend that your mind is a sponge, soaked in vinegar. You must wring out the sour substance. I will help you to do this, but the hardest part you must do yourself." At Narcisa's tender, encouraging words, the patient became calm and showed himself willing to cooperate. But in a few minutes he turned ghastly pale again, and began to cry out, "But sister, listen to me. He won't go away. He is back again to torment me. Look. Look. Yes, Frances, I can see him, she agreed patiently, but it is essential for you to help me drive him away. Oh, what a diabolical ghost! He exclaimed, weeping like a child and inspiring my compassion. Put your trust in Jesus and forget the monster, she advised in a soothing voice, and now, let me apply a magnetic pass, and the ghost will go away. She gave him a magnetic treatment, filling him with invigorating, comforting fluids. He thanked her, looking greatly relieved. After the treatment was over, he spoke again, "Now I feel much better." After kneading his pillows and making him comfortable, Narcisa asked an attendant to bring him a glass of magnetized water. Her example was edifying, her goodwill was contagious. Perceiving my earnest wish to learn, she seemed willing to initiate me in the sublime secrets of service. To whom was he referring? I asked, greatly impressed. Is he, perhaps, pursued by some shadow, invisible to my eyes? Oh, no, she replied. He meant his own corpse. You don't say so, I replied, take aback. The poor boy entered the spirit sphere after an accident due only to his own carelessness. He was excessively attached to his physical body, and for days he wouldn't leave his grave, refusing to conform to his new state. So deep were his delusions that he spent a long time desperately trying to raise his stiff body. He was terrified at the idea of facing the unknown, and utterly unable to muster even the slightest detachment from his physical sensations. Aid from higher spheres was of no avail. He had closed his mental zone against all thoughts of eternal life. At last, the worms made him experience such atrocious pain that the unfortunate creature ran away from his tomb horrified, only to begin a dismal wandering in the darker regions of the lower zone. However, those who had been his parents on earth enjoy considerable credit over here, and through their intercession he was rescued by the Samaritans who brought him, almost by force, to our colony. His condition is so serious that he won't be able to leave the chambers of rectification for a long while. The friend who had been his physical father is now engaged in a difficult mission far from the astral city. Does he come to see the patient? Yes, he has already come twice, and each time I was deeply moved by his silent grief. The boy's mental disorder is so great that he didn't even recognize his generous and devoted father. He kept crying pitifully, under painful delusions. His father, who had come to visit him accompanied by Minister Padua of Communication, showed emotional fortitude while in the presence of the minister to whom he owed his unfortunate son's hospitalization. They spent some time commenting on the spiritual condition of the newcomer. But when Minister Padua was called away unexpectedly, apologizing to me for his human gesture, he knelt by his son's bed, taking the boy's hands into his own, holding them tightly as if to transmit some invigorating vital fluids, kissed the boy's forehead, and wept. I couldn't keep back my tears, so I felt the room. I don't know what happened, but I noticed that from that day, Francis had been steadily improving. His condition of total insanity has been reduced to occasional crises, which are gradually diminishing. How touching this is! I exclaimed, deeply impressed. But how can his corpse pursue him? Francis' visions, she explained, are nothing but hallucinations. Many spirits suffer from them after physical death. Those who are excessively attached to their material body, who make it the center of their existence, living only through it and for it, cannot abandon their corpses when called to the real life. They do not accept the idea of spirituality, and struggle desperately to retain their physical bodies. In time, however, voracious worms drive them away. Then, horrified, they fall to the opposite extreme. The sight of their own corpse, a strong creation of their own minds, torments them to the innermost recesses of their souls. They live in crisis for more or less lengthy periods of time, and many suffer acutely until a ghost corpse they have created totally disintegrates. Noting how deeply affected I was, Narcisa continued, thanks to our Heavenly Father, I have learned a great deal in these years of service. How profound the spiritual slumber of most of our incarnate brothers is. Still, we mustn't worry to the point of letting it hurt us. The chrysalis adheres to inert matter, but the butterfly will rise from it in easy flight. The seed is almost imperceptible, although it is to become a giant oak. The withered flower returns to the earth, but its perfume abides in the air. All embryonic life appears to sleep. We must never forget these lessons. Narcissa fell into a silence which I dared not interrupt. Chapter 30, Inheritance and Euthanasia. I had not yet recovered from my astonishment when Celestius came up to Narcissa and said, "Our sister Pauline wishes to see her father in Pavilion 5. Before complying, I thought I had better consult with you, as the patient is still experiencing a deep crisis." In her usual gentle manner, she replied, "Show her in at once. Pauline is devoting all her leisure time to the delicate task of reconciling the different members of her family, so she has Venranda's permission to see her father whenever necessary." The messenger left hastily, and Narcissa informed me, "You'll see what a devoted daughter she is." Less than 1 minute later, we saw Pauline coming towards us. She was slim and lovely, reflecting angelical beauty, dressed in a light tunic of luminous silk. Her eyes reflected deep concern. The nurse introduced us politely. Probably feeling I could be trusted, she inquired anxiously, "How is father, my friend?" "A little better," Narcissa answered, "but still considerably unbalanced." "It's a pity," Pauline continued. "Neither he nor the others will give up the mental attitude in which they obstinately persist. Always the same hate, the same lack of understanding." Narcissa invited us to follow her, and in a few moments we were standing by the bedside of what looked like a disagreeable old man. With his bitter, scowling look, disheveled hair, deep wrinkles and retracted lips, he inspired more pity than sympathy. However, I endeavored to control my inferior vibrations and to see in this unfortunate sufferer only a spirit brother. My feelings of repulsion disappeared and my mind felt clearer. I applied the lesson to myself. How had I arrived at the Ministry of Assistance? How repelling my own appearance must have been, with utter desperation written all over my face. When we consider other people's misfortune in the light of our own imperfections, there is always room for brotherly love in our heart. The old patient had no words of affection for his daughter, who greeted him tenderly. He looked like a caged beast as he frowned at her, eyes glowering with harshness and rebellion. "Are you feeling better, father?" asked Pauline with loving respect. "Oh, no," the patient bellowed. "I can forget the villain. I have no peace of mind. I can still see him by my bedside administering deadly poison. Please, father, do try to forget all that," she earnestly entreated. "Remember that Adalbert entered our home as a son, sent by God." "My son? Never," shouted the unfortunate old man. "He is a loathsome criminal, unworthy of pardon. He is the devil's own son, that's what he is." Pauline, eyes brimming with tears, spoke persuasively, "Father, let us learn from Jesus to love one another. On earth our family experiences are the means of teaching us real spiritual love. We must bear in mind that there is only one Father who is truly eternal, God. But the Lord of life grants us the blessed opportunity of fatherhood and motherhood on earth so that we may learn perfect brotherly love. They are the temples of sublime union, a preparation for universal solidarity. We have to struggle and suffer a great deal before acquiring the title of brother in the real sense of the word. The whole creation is but one family under the loving care of only one father." Hearing his daughter's sweet voice, the patient broke into convulsive weeping. "Father, forgive Adalbert. Try to see in him not only the reckless son but the brother badly in need of enlightenment. I have just come from our earthly home, where I observed serious disturbances. From your sickbed here you are constantly projecting poisonous fluids of bitterness and incomprehension to them. They, in turn, are doing the same to you. Thought, as subtle waves, never misses its target, however distant it may be. The exchange of hate and suspicion causes ruin and suffering to the soul. Broken down by continual sorrow, mother was unable to resist the atmosphere at home, and was taken to a mental hospital a few days ago. Amalia and Casilda have brought a lawsuit against Adalbert and Agener because of serious disagreements about the large fortune you amassed on the physical plane. A sad situation indeed, but one which might gradually improve. were it not for your vigorous mind steeped in plans of revenge. Here, in the spirit sphere, I find you distressed.